Welcome to the latest edition of the OmniTalk Retail Ask an Expert series. I'm your host, Chris Walton.
And I'm Ann Mazenga.
And we are the founders of OmniTalk, the fast-growing retail media outlet that is all about the companies, the technologies, and the people that are coming together to shape the future of retail. Or as we like to say at OmniTalk, Ann, the media organization that focuses on tomorrow, today. And today, we are calling on one of our favorite experts of recent memory, Brian Kavanaugh, the Director of Global Revenue Marketing, and he is at Binder, and he has brought with him a special guest, Alex Alves, the head of analyst relations at Salsify, to help us crack the code on digital commerce with insider tips on how to optimize your digital shelf. And what is the digital shelf, you might ask? Well, we're going to talk to Brian and Alex about that exact topic. So Brian, welcome back to OmniTalk. We're going to go to you first. This is what, your third time on the show?
I believe this is my third. Is this going to be like SNL, where if you hit the five timers club, you get a kind of a special ceremony and all that?
We're thinking about it.
Yeah, this would be my third. Yeah,
we need to figure out what that is. It's not going to be a jacket because that's too expensive to ship, but we're going to come up with something. But Alex, welcome to OmniTalk. This is your first time. Has Brian prepared you well for what lies in store for you over the next 30 minutes?
He has. He's been a great partner. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are really excited to have you both. Thanks so much for taking the time. Brian has blown our minds every single time that we've had him on the show. So I can only imagine what the two of you have up your sleeves for today. Before we get into our discussion with Brian and Alex, though, just a quick reminder for everyone who's joining us live on LinkedIn right now. Please ask your questions of these two experts at any time via the chat session window that's on the right-hand side of your screen. We want to keep this engaging and make sure that you get all of the questions that you have about Digital Shelf, about all of the things that we're going to cover today. So please put those in the chat as we go along. Well, Brian and Alex, let's start off with, as we always do. I'd love for the audience to get to meet you, Alex, and then Brian, just a reminder for those who may not have attended our sessions before. Just give a little bit of each of your backgrounds and then what Binder and Salsify do. Alex, I'm going to start with you since you're the first timer here. Give us a little bit of your background, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure thing. So my name is Alex. As Chris mentioned, I work at Salsify as head of analyst relations. I actually started my career as a buyer. So I worked in fashion, which my parents really loved after paying for my Ivy League education. So I worked in buying for a while. So really got in the weeds of retail. And then decided to make the move to tech. So I worked for a company called Jor that does order management between brands.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right.
We love Jor.
I was there for a while. And then decided to move back to Boston, my hometown, and landed at Salsify. So half of my tenure at Salsify was on the retail partnerships team. I worked with retailers like Amazon and Instacart and the Home Depot on how to get better content onto their product detail pages or PDPs. And then the last few years, I've been head of analyst relations. So working with industry experts at Forrester and Gartner to really keep a pulse on all things going on in the world of e-com and digital commerce and Salsify space, which is product experience management. So what we do is help brands and retailers win the digital shelf by making sure that their presence and their content online is really driving conversion with their shoppers.
And especially across all of those marketplaces, I imagine, and as retail media networks continue to expand. So this is great. We're really excited to have you, Alex. Thank you. Brian, let's go to you next.
Absolutely. So, hey, everyone. And, you know, good to see those of you again who may have been on some of the other sessions. But my name is Brian Kavanaugh. I'm the Director of Global Revenue Marketing at Binder. And for those that don't know Binder, we're a leader, according to Forrester, in our category, just like Salsify is in digital asset management, or the DAM, as we always call it. And the shortest way I can describe it is that is really the system of record for all your enterprise content for your brand. And when I say enterprise, I mean, of course, e-commerce and product content, but also brand, campaign, sales, HR, you name it. So really, content across the enterprise is hosted, managed, and then prepped for delivery in Binder.
Nice. So, Ann, we've definitely got two experts here. This meets the bar of expertise for sure. So, all right. So without further ado, We've said the phrase a couple times already. The digital shelf, quote unquote, Joey Tribbiani air quotes, you know, needed for this one potentially too. But it's a term we're hearing more and more. I want to ask you first, how do each of you define it? And should companies assign priority to it? So, Brian, let's start with you.
Sure. And so what I'd like to point out when we talk about digital shelf and a lot of our conversations, you know, thus far, Chris and Ann are around like retail or brands and all that. But when you start talking about the digital shelf, it's important to define at least two groups, the brand and the retailer.
Okay.
The brand, of course, is sort of the whoever's manufacturing the product and whoever's registering the sale, like, oh, we sold this many products this year. The retailer, of course, as we know, but again, it becomes important on the digital shelf, is the customer endpoint, such as Amazon, Target, Walmart, Kroger, and many, many, many others, right? And so that interplay becomes crucial. And it's getting a little blurrier on the digital shelf because, of course, if you're on Amazon, you're probably building a D2C alongside it, or you want a better mix of retail reliance versus your own direct-to-consumer reliance. And the same thing always kind of existed in brick and mortar, right? You probably sold at Macy's, but maybe had your own boutique or activation where you more control the experience. But the scalability of that dynamic is just so much greater in the digital-first economy. And so with that, I'll let hand it over to Alex to elaborate on and define the digital shelf.
Yeah, Alex, do you agree with what Brian said, or do you was there any color you'd add to what he just mentioned?
Yeah, no, I think it's really important. I think sometimes when we think about the market, when we think about commerce, it's just really important to remember that there are two sides of the equation. But to Brian's point, lines are getting blurred. Retailers are becoming brands. They're investing a ton in private label, and brands are becoming retailers because they're also investing in their D2C sites where they might see better margins. So it's just really important to sort of understand how both sides of the market are evolving and how the use cases are changing so we know how to serve them. At Salsify, like, digital shelf is in our mission, right? We are here to help brand manufacturers, retailers, and distributors win on the digital shelf. So it used to be that as a shopper, you would walk into a store and you'd literally see an item on a shelf. And that was how you interacted with the brand, right? You saw the packaging, you saw the font, you saw the colors, you read the ingredients, you saw the nutritional label, and you decided if you wanted to buy. As we know, that has completely changed, right? Brands are interacting with their shoppers in a ton of places, whether it's on a mobile app, whether it's web search, whether it's a search result, whether it's the actual product detail page on a retailer's website. So all of those touch points are what we say comprise the digital shelf. And the reason it's so important, I mean, according to Forrester, by 2027, 70% of all purchases are going to be digitally influenced. So it's really important, obviously, that brands show up wherever their shoppers are and have that really, you know, compelling interaction with them the first time and all the times to make sure that they're driving that sale.
Got it. So I want to wrap this in a bow. So if I put it simply then, like, based on what you both just said, really what you're saying is that the digital self is meant to connote how you show up in digital commerce, right? And the point you're emphasizing is that it takes two. It takes two to tango. It takes the brand and the retailer being coordinated on that expression of whatever product you're selling to the consumer in the digital sphere. Is that right, Alex? Am I summarizing that correctly?
Yeah, I think that's right. And the only thing I'd highlight is just how difficult that is.
We
see it, right? But it is really hard to do from both sides of the equation. And there are tons of competing priorities. So, but yes, that's right.
And that's what we're going to double click into in this conversation.
Yes. Well, and one way that brands and retailers have always worked together is in setting up product databases, product imagery that is consistent across these digital platforms, across the in-store platforms. And so I want to just take a minute to go into those definitions too, before we continue the conversation. So things like DAM, PIM, PXM, like, can you just give some, I always love to have somebody explain what those acronyms are for the audience before we start using them, because I know we're going to a lot in this conversation. So Alex, if you don't mind diving into those definitions for the audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it. Let's clarify this PIM PXM thing. Cause I feel
and how they're different too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is my favorite part of the whole conversation right here. Go ahead, Alex. Let's do it.
I'm so excited. You can tell how excited I am.
Yeah.
So product experience management was actually first coined as a term back in, I believe it was 2014 by an ex-Forrester analyst. His name was Nasri Angel. And what it really did is kind of talk about what the evolution of a PIM was. Like a PIM was originally a way for a brand manufacturer in this example to organize their product data according to their own internal taxonomy, right? So I have 100 SKUs. I need a product record for each of those SKUs. And those PIMs could maybe handle like a couple of digital assets, but they were really about just getting that data clean and right in the system. The problem is once digital commerce came into play, while it is still important for a brand to have that product record and golden record and understand sort of like what they need for each product, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter as much if it's not meeting Amazon's requirements or Walmart's requirements or Kroger's requirements. So at the end of the day, your goal is to get that product onto those websites to drive sales, right? That is the goal of the enterprise when you're talking about commerce. So not only do you have to meet all of those endpoint requirements, but those endpoint requirements are always changing. In 2022, Amazon changed their data schema requirements for brands about 367 times. That is
more than once a day.
Yes.
And most of us, I hope, don't work on the weekends.
Right. More than a leap year. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it got really difficult for traditional PIMs to manage what the market demanded. And that's where PXM came in. So PXM is really built on three core pillars: centralize your content, connect it to where it needs to go, and then automate the process so that you can get to market faster. So it's centralize, connect, and automate. So PXM is built on the PIM, but that modern PIM has to be able to understand market demands and adapt and transform your content to meet it so that you can actually drive commerce in a digital world. So
that Alex, wait, let me stop you real quick. And who's the primary user of a PIM? Is it now going back to the brands and the retailers? Is it the brands primarily?
Both brands and retailers have PIMs. I would say retail PIMs tend to be a little more focused on that like strong, core, comprehensive, robust data structure piece, and less flexible maybe than what a brand needs. Because again, if you think about a retailer, they're ingesting all this content and they need it to match requirements. A brand needs to match a ton of different sets of
requirements. That's what I was saying. So it's more, the PXM idea is more applicable to them in a lot of ways because they're placing their products in more of the digital universe, so to speak, for lack of a better word.
Everyone needs to drive product experiences, right? Yeah. Like if a retailer is not driving a good experience on their site, and this goes back to where brands and retailers need to collaborate, that sale's not happening for either side of the market.
And I would say, Chris, you know, what Alex and I talk about a lot is this notion of content delivery. And it's really, in that sense, it's more through the brand lens. Because if you think about it, this notion of delivery is you own all of your content information. It has to get out to the market, but the market could mean any number of things, including the relationship between your retailer relationship, your direct-to-consumer, field sales, brick and mortar. So it's kind of like the brands are really oriented around that. The retailers, not so much. They're kind of the end point.
That's a great point.
And Brian, explain a little bit for us about the DAM component of this and what that stands for and how that fits into the PIM and PXM.
Sure. So DAM is digital asset management. You know, anyone working with content and working in e-commerce is going to be familiar at a high level. But the principles of what Alex, you know, just described of PXM are exactly the same here. And there's a reason that we were just at the event 2 days ago, you know, having similar conversations and have many joint customers. I guess the difference is it's almost like a step before, if you think of it linear, you know, like the name of my session was called From the Photo Shoot to the Customer, how you can accelerate that process. And so it's like, if you think of it linear, it's more the photo shoot, the retouching, the management and setting up for delivery is in the DAM. And then the actual integration between the two platforms and then delivery downstream is more in Salsify and the PXM. And the beauty of that is a two-way interplay of data and the assets. So if you want to retouch or reshoot a certain product line, you just do it once, update it, and then it's automatically updated everywhere it appears downstream. But also the beauty of that is, what about your social team? Because the social team is doing more activations and more brand awareness, but actually driving more commerce now. And so where does the digital shelf end at Target and begin on TikTok, right? Well, like without sort of centralizing the content, there's just going to be these silos that end up building up by, you know, not almost intentionally, but in the wrong way. And so centralizing the assets themselves, which make their way onto the PDP, but also a lot of other places, is crucial.
And Brian, I want to know too, as we think about like the expansion of these assets, like it was just once, this is the product image, this, you know, these same images might be used in some like display ads or something. Now we have retail media. How are you seeing like the teams that are working with these products, the DAM, the PIM, the PXM, like that weren't working together before? Is there more, like, do we need more access for more teams, I imagine, to these assets, or how is that functioning?
Absolutely. And what we see our customers doing more and more is creating and delivering out not final assets or the final product, but more building blocks, style guides, and templates, such right. that more groups can take them and run with them, whether that's an internal creative team, an external agency, some local marketing team that only they know how the product should come across in Latin America, for example, or something like right. that, right? And on that notion, if it's not centralized and all of those core ingredients that really are the essence of the brand and bring that story to life aren't in a global system that, you know, has a high level of governance and, to Alex's point, taxonomy and data management, there's no way you achieve that. And you're still going to just be operating in that regional, functional, or siloed approach where, you know, and the little secret is we're in 2024, the digital first economy has come a long way. When yes. you talk to these big legacy brands that have been around 100 plus years, you know, maybe operate in 100 plus countries, and they're kind of saying like, yeah, we still kind of operate just selling products in different countries and don't really have oversight into that, you know, central notion of the brand that then gets extended out to the world.
Right. And so, and then Alex, it's consistent then across the board too, is what you're saying. So as we continue to shop more, like on social platforms as well, like you're having the same experience as a consumer, whether you're coming from any of those spaces. Alex, is this something that you are in agreement with, or would you add anything here?
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. And I think the other important thing about having sort of this global access to the same set of product information is just the efficiency that you get, right? So if the French team has already developed assets for X amount of SKUs, but the US team is working in a totally different PIM and doesn't have access to it, or a totally different system and doesn't see that, they're recreating images that could have been reused, right? And we know that in this world, we got to move fast.
Yeah.
So it is really important to kind of break down those silos and think about a PXM solution or a DAM solution or a PIM solution that can really support a global company, because more and more companies are starting to sell globally. I'll just sort of put a tagline on this too. We just released a white paper called "What is the Next Gen PXM, the Past, Present, and Future of Product Experience Management?" And we talk about how the next generation of PXM solutions will need to power the product enterprise, meaning that every team is going to need access to product information in a way they haven't before. It's really just been the e-commerce and marketing teams and IT, of course, to like do some governance stuff. But when you think about legal teams, right, everyone's going to need to be seeing the same set of optimized information. When you think about services and support, if they're on the phone with a customer and they have a question about a product, they should be seeing the same set of information that the e-commerce team already sent out to the digital shelf. Retail media is a huge, huge sort of component here. It's a hot topic right now. Retail media teams need to know that the products they're putting on ads have optimized content that are going to appear on the PDP they right. want their shoppers to click over to. Because if the shopper gets to that PDP from the ad and the content's not good, then they just wasted an ad dollar. So it is definitely, we're seeing a lot more collaboration in systems like DAM and PIM and PXM as folks are realizing how core product information is.
Especially as AI comes into the fold too, because I just sat in a meeting with an agency that I'm on the board of, and we were just talking about like, as AI is being used to develop some of this creative content, or like, you know, they're elaborating on some of this creative content, the lawyer, the legal part of it too, Alex, is so important, because they're already experiencing like, okay, how do I know we generated this image? It was our creative property. Like those kinds of things are coming into play, and we haven't even scratched the surface of that yet, but.
So I want to take a second. I want to put you on the spot. And Brian, I'm going to give you the honors here. I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to put your feet to the fire here, because you work for a DAM provider, and I want to get into the reason why we're here. So if I'm a retailer, I'm a generic retailer, Target, Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, whomever, which of these solutions that we just talked about, the PIM, the DAM, the PXM, should I prioritize? Or is that even the right way to think about it?
You know, like we've been saying, the lines are getting blurrier, right? And so we do have some of those as customers, because Alex said, of course, they have their own labels and they need to promote their own brand. And so, you know, Target is actually a customer in APAC of Bynder, so I can just kind of use that as a general example. But they've almost got a different priority here where they are now creating these promotions. They need to build a brand and drive a lot of advertising, whether it's to their site or to their in-store. That is kind of this, and we always say at Bynder, no brand is an island. Mm-hmm. Brands exist in this complex, diversified network of relationships. And so it's rarely is it ever just Target, even if it's their own label, it's Target plus Threshold or whatever one of their labels are called, right? It's like you've got this brand interplay, let alone all the partnerships. They have Starbucks in their stores, right? Or Disney they do things with. And so what I mean by that is I would start in that sense with the dam, because there's going to be so much content not even related to e-commerce that they have to get out quickly and, you know, put their brand first step on. Now, if you bring it more to the brand side, again, in these definitions of whoever's manufacturing and delivering to the digital shelf, you know, we have many conversations that we had the other day where they invested first in Salsify, because that is really like sort of step one in establishing a digital shelf where maybe the notion of it didn't even exist. And even the role of digital shelf manager, I imagine, Alex, I saw a bunch at the event, but I don't know that existed 5 years ago, or maybe, you know, like 15 years ago, maybe a merchandising mm-hmm. manager as it pertained to brick and mortar, but yeah.
So Alex, I mean, so if I listen back, so it kind of depends, but probably depends on who you are as a retailer or a brand, where you're going to start. But Alex, is there anything you disagree with or agree with in what Brian just said?
Yeah, nothing I disagree with. I think the way we think about it, and this kind of goes back to the definition of the digital shelf as the brand's packaging, right? The PDP is now that package. So I think you have to think about the PDP holistically. That's where the consumer's spending time. That's where they're going to decide if they want to purchase or not. So everything from the search result they're going to get to the product title, then they see the images, then they see the descriptions, then they see the bullets, then they see the below the fold enhanced content, maybe there's videos, then they see the reviews, right? You got to sort of think about it holistically. And I think that's both for brands and retailers. And that's where it gets really important for them to work together. So brands have to be really good at getting that content ready to send to the PDP. And retailers have to get really good at making it easy for the brands to get that content to them, especially if they're going to be changing their requirements every day and need the brands to keep that content updated.
And Alex, how, you know, if I am Target, then I have this system in place. It sounds like you're saying to start with the core elements of that PDP, where people are going to land when they're ready to buy the product. But what else needs to happen after that? Like, what's the next kind of steps B and C maybe after that? For the retailers, in this case, we'll use Target again as an example, to have that exceptional digital shelf.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where ads come into play. That's where things like product recommendations come into play, right? So the retailer has to make sure that their own kind of algorithms and understanding of their consumer, that the data they've collected about their customers is being put into action. Discoverability, right? So helping consumers discover something new. Maybe they didn't know I know when I walk into a Target store, I buy about 25 things I didn't want to buy. Is that as easy to do online as it is in store? I just need to buy diapers for my toddler. Am I also buying a onesie and, you know, some body lotion for him because it's popping up as I'm shopping? So I think that's on the retailers. I think also just making it really like the checkout experience super easy, right? Which is like a totally different sort of product that they have on their website, but just making all of that experience as frictionless as possible. I mean, that's a big word that we hear all the time, removing that friction. But if that first sort of interaction a consumer has is that PDP, I want to go back to, I think it's really important for retailers to think about the technology that they have in place to help their suppliers get them that content, how easy and open they're making it for them to do so. And the other thing trend we're seeing with a lot of retailers is kind of this omni-channel view. They're finally getting to the point where they're like, we should be ingesting everything for store and online.
Yes.
The same portal, right? And again, that's easier for the brands. So Walmart just released their OmniSpec API as an example. Kroger's another one where they're literally redoing all their tech to make it super easy, realizing that the brands are the content owners. They have the good content the retailers want. The retailer's job is just to make it easy to ingest.
Yeah. And Brian, let's go to the content specifically now. Like, how are you advising, or how are you seeing retailers like Walmart? How are they like making the content stand out to like enhance that digital shelf experience?
Well, if I think of the brands sold on Walmart, for example,
yeah,
every brand has a full product catalog, and then they also might have a full digital catalog. And what Alex and I have talked about is most brands that are manufacturing products and selling on something like Walmart or anywhere else for that matter, they're actually only selling a certain percentage of what they currently produce. And that was eye-opening to me, because I just assumed everything that you're producing just gets sold in the places you want to sell it. But there's a volume or a total sort of net gain that can be had by setting up the DAM and the PIM and a proper MarTech stack that establishes greater scale for the digital shelf. So in terms of impact, it's greater sales by capturing the long tail, because you actually have more variety available on more retailers in exactly the format that it's supposed to be. And so that is what a lot of these, you know, a lot of these iconic brands that we talk about might have hundreds of brands within their portfolio. Mm-hmm. Each of those may have, you know, 50, 100, 100 plus products. So think about the level of scale there and the number of markets they operate in. And so really that hit home for me is you just sort of assume that, you know, Kraft Heinz or Molson Coors or all of these brands can sell in every single customer endpoint what that they want to with a snap of a finger. It's not the case. And so When we say scalability or speed of execution, it has material impact, because, you know, when you're talking in the millions of dollars of sales, they can crank that dial a little bit more, right, in the right direction of timeliness of the content or the exact accuracy of the product information. That could be big for the quarter.
Yeah, there's a flexibility angle here too. Alex, I'm not surprised that you mentioned Walmart, you know, in terms of their investment here in essentially getting their data correct so that all their products show up as well as possible on the digital shelf. So I'm curious, in your experience, what are some of the ways you've seen, and Walmart may be a good example, I don't know, but if there's others, that's great. What are some of the examples you can share of how you've seen the C-suite galvanize the efforts around this? Because, you know, as you're talking, it is such an important element to get right, the coordination of these systems. What have you seen the C-suite do that really gets their organization behind this effort? Because it isn't always the case at every retailer.
Yeah. I think what you said is right, is getting the organization behind the effort. Because if you think about it, every team is going to have a different objective and a different outcome, right? And we're not just talking like IT and business users. We're going down to the level of the merchandisers,
right?
Even the store teams. So everyone's incentivized in different ways. And you really have to get everyone aligned on, this is why we're going after digital. This is why it's going to be important. This is the outcome that we want to see. I think the other thing, and this came out of the Salesforce conference, Brian and I just came from as well, is that for a lot of retailers, e-com is still a you know, relatively small portion of their business. Mm-hmm. But you have to be future looking. What is the fastest growing area of your business? I bet you 9 out of 10 times, if not 10 out of 10 times, it's going to be e-commerce. So you can't just think about what's happening now, right? Like, what are you preparing for down the line? What are the next 10 years going to look like? And there's a ton of uncertainty right now. So I think it is difficult for retailers to think about where to prioritize and what to invest in. But there's no doubt that the world has changed and digital is not going anywhere, right? We're seeing whole new titles and roles pop up, right? E-commerce category managers, ECAT managers, I think is what they're called. We were saying internally, like AI could make a great ECAT manager.
Right. One day.
That'd be amazing. But we're starting to see this blend, right? We're becoming more omni-channel. We're thinking about digital is not like a small part of the business, center of excellence doing its own thing. It's being absorbed into the core business. It is a core part of what future for success for retailers will look like. And that's the mind shift that I think the C-suite has to drive themselves and for the rest of the org. Well,
and Alex, I think you bring up a good point that, Chris, we just talked about a couple of weeks ago with SPS Commerce, and you gave your example of working in the stores and people wanting to know different specs, like the size, the dimensions of a product or where a product was made, things that they haven't been asking for before. But Alex, to your point, like if they're starting this journey somewhere in on a digital shelf somewhere, if 70% of their journeys are going to be starting in a digital place, they're going to have a lot more. They're coming with you, whether it's in-store or online, armed with so much more information and with more questions that I would imagine that now, you know, the C-suite needs to invest in, and then that trickle down needs to happen all the way to the store level so that they can answer that question for that consumer when they're standing right in front of them. Is that, am I thinking about that the right way?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, again, at the conference, Chris Perry from First Mover called out the same Forrester stat. And he actually said, I would say it's 100% because that 30% of just in-store influence is really the buyers, the store buyers are still keeping an eye on what people are buying online in order to influence what they put in store.
Yeah.
Right. Both lines are just completely blurred right now. So there's no way you can't be doing digital right if you're going to succeed in commerce and gain market share and beat out competitors and all that fun stuff.
Well, and Brad, I want to let you in on this too, but the other thing that I've thought about recently of the content we've done, Ann, is the conversation we had with Meta out at Shop Talk, like in terms of the attribution and influence that they see from social media on the in-store channel, particularly itself, which plays into the digital asset management side of what Brian does too. So Brian, what are your thoughts here? How do you get the C-suite behind this?
Yeah, I mean, first it would be telling a compelling story that ends with sales, but starts with more of the brand, because execs really care about how they come across, right? And execs come across, meaning on Amazon, but also on your own direct to consumer, what the brand really stands for. And so it has to come back to sales or potential of sales, like Alex said, but it also has to be about audience. And so that's what we talk about, targeted content and exceptional content experiences, is achieving a level of scale of targeted content. And notice I'm not saying personalization, because personalization could mean I have an email that says, hey, Chris, like, you know, want to check out this product. But, you know, targeted content is chopping up your customer base into smaller and smaller, you know, defined cohorts and segments, right? And so a good example with product information is Gen Z, and they have a lot of different things that they care about that maybe millennials or older generations didn't, including product information or the composition of the ingredients or what went into making a shoe with polyurethane or something like that. So even though product information and that you kind of call those like specs that you would just show up on a data sheet or at the bottom of the PDP, and maybe like the average consumer maybe wouldn't even look at that, but it has to be there by, like, you know, by law. It's almost the leader now of a brand story saying, hey, we made this ethically or with this, you know, sustainable material. So that's really interesting to me. And if you can weave in that sustainability play to your, you know, for example, and actually say it's going to make the brand stand out, not just check some sort of box on the back end, I think that's really powerful.
Well, and the content is just starting there too, Brian. Like, that's the thing that I think is really interesting. Like, when you get to the core of what you're talking about, the brand story, the content that they're developing that's going on these PDPs, that's engaging people on social, like, that content is coming from, like, totally new dimensions, and new product specifications are driving that. So you got to have all that together.
How it's made, where it's made, you know, all of these. And, you know, you might call that product information. And in the dam, you know, we call it, you know, the meta properties that sync both ways, you know, between the dam and the PXM. You know, how many times are we at cocktail parties or something? You're talking about a brand or a purchase you just made, and someone says, yo, you know, the cool thing is that it's actually, you know, they make it the right way, or they got a cool story. Their founder
is
from...
There's a one-for-one component or whatever. Yeah,
there's a one-for-one component. You know, their founder is from this space and he has a really great mission. And it's like, that's coming up more and more. And that's when we say exceptional content experiences. It's just putting all that front and center, you know, such that the consumer can make the right choice and has all the information on hand.
Well, we're running a little long on time, but we want to ask you this too, because you guys were both at a conference together recently. You were at the Salsify event, which you have mentioned a couple times already in this conversation. So I'm curious, was there any on the ground intel, you know, insider conversations you can give us into what happened at that event, Brian?
So I would say we talked to a recently signed on customer that's in the Fortune 500, but, you know, they'll remain nameless, and they've got this big digital transformation. They manufacture consumer products, but they're kind of like a manufacturer in that, you know, there's a lot that goes into getting all of those products, you know, out to market. And they said that when they did an assessment, you know, in the last year, they have over 500 owned websites, not to mention all the distributors and hardware stores and mom and pop shops that their products may be sold in. 500 owned websites globally, and only 40% of them are even using their current content management system that adheres to brand standards. The other 60% have just been rogue silos. Somebody in a country somewhere spun up a site out of necessity. And so it's like, he said it's probably going to take 2 years, but the idea is 100% of everywhere their quote unquote brand footprint shows up is on brand, adheres to their standards and their CMO's mission, which is kind of eye opening, but a lot of brands are going through that exact process right now. And you know, you can see what the material impact would be if you can get 100% of your brand touch points all aligned, all delivering the same message.
Alex, any final thoughts here before we close it out?
Yeah, I mean, it came up in every session and we'd be remiss not to talk about it here, but AI was a really big topic. But I think what people were looking for, and I hope they got from the Digital Shelf Summit, was how Salsify and Bynder are putting AI into practice and how they can do so and kind of what it can be for. What I mean by that is we really have to tie AI to value. And that's a big thing here at Salsify is value-driven AI. We really tie it to efficiencies that can be gained. So even to Brian's example, like when we talk about PXM and what the promise of PXM is, right? And this is again, in that white paper I mentioned earlier, PXM, product experience management, has not achieved its full promise. And that promise or that goal is to optimize every touch point on the digital shelf everywhere, right? Exactly what Brian just said, that's like impossible for brands to do today, right? There's just not enough money, there's not enough time, there's not enough people, there's not enough resources, but AI is going to change that. And that's going to have a really, really big impact and meaningful impact for brands. So if 60% of your SKUs, you just don't have time to touch and get compliant to endpoint requirements, AI is going to allow you to do that. And you can see a really meaningful lift in sales and conversion and things like that. Not to mention all the other efficiencies you can get using our platforms to actually just get work done and get products to market. So it's just really exciting to see some of these capabilities like coming into reality on Salsify and on other platforms. And I think just helping brands and retailers get a little more comfortable with exactly what it means, that it's not job replacement, it's job enhancement. It's just going to be so big in the DAM world and the PXM world, and everyone's really excited about it. So that was great to see.
Yeah, it's a great point to end on too, because it's always important to remind everyone that everything we're talking about, you can't do with humans. You can't succeed in the digital world with just human execution. You have to use software to help you achieve the success that you want. And to the point that you've raised a bunch of times on our weekly podcast, the number one thing we hear from the executives we interview at all the trade shows is you have to get a handle on this to be successful. You have to have what we're talking about here is your omni-channel foundation to be successful. Those are the retailers that get it. And this is a key ingredient to that. So Brian, Alex, thank you so much for joining us. This conversation was fantastic. If people want to get in touch with you, learn more about Bynder, about Salsify, what's the best way for them to do that? Alex, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Thank you so much. This was really great. You can always visit salsify.com, request a demo, reach out to learn more. Also, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm definitely chatting about a lot of this stuff. And also from the Salsify account, we post a ton about what's going on internally, blog posts, things to just help you sort of get started on this journey. So I'm looking forward to connecting with you all.
Awesome. Thank you. And Brian?
Same here. LinkedIn is probably the best place. So connect with me. I post about these topics and others regularly and love to hear about them if others are posting about them. And then on Bynder.com, you'll see a page called Events, where it'll show you where we'll be in person for the rest of this year. And so it could be, again, if these topics are of interest to you and you're, you know, on the brand or retailer side, it could very well be that you'll be at some of those places too. So we'd love to see you.
Awesome. Awesome. Yes. Well, thank you both. That wraps us up today. Thanks to Brian Kavanaugh and Alex Olives for sitting down with us. And thanks to all of you that joined us live on LinkedIn. As always, on behalf of all of us here at OmniTalk, on behalf of Anne and myself, be careful out there.